The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Oh.
I am your host, Tim.
That's why we have a professional to do that, usually.
I know, right?
Usually, when he's not stuck at work. Shout out to Agent 70. But I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at RuddyCat on Twitter.
Doing a not great stand-in of one Agent 70, but that's all right. We're going to get through this.
We'll make it do what it do.
There it is.
And we also have at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
I'm going to throw a shout-out to Agent 70, not just because he's not here, but because he's even not at New York Comic Con. He's just stuck at work like a slave. Yeah. Probably chained him to his desk. He's probably got a foot collar, ankle collar on. Probably beating him with reeds and a burlap sack.
Okay. Hopefully he'll get to go home and
you don't know what he works, where he works. I mean, it's rough.
Hopefully he'll get a good night meal and some rests and be able to hit up the jam packed halls of New York Comic Con tomorrow.
Hopefully.
But we want to thank you for joining us tonight, and go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. You can follow us on our social media accounts. If you go to the homepage of theclicknation.com, you'll find links to Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+. You can also subscribe on YouTube, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and Google Play to the theclicknation.com Comic Book Chronicles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Remix.
We are part of the Code Slither Podcast Network, the CSPN.us. Do it today. And we have a Redbubble account. Go to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop and buy some Comic Book Chronicles merchandise. You got, let's see, iPhone cases, t-shirts, and much more.
Mugs and all types of stuff.
So today marked the beginning of New York Comic Con 2016. Lots of comic book, movie, and television announcements are coming fast and furious, so we'll have a lot to talk about in the news section. But first, we're going to kick things off. First, we're going to kick things off with the comic book reviews of the week. And first up, yeah, there's no sound effect, but can't throw one in there. There we go. He's working on it.
Yeah.
So first up this week, we're going to talk about the much-anticipated Death of X from Marvel Comics, teasing what led up to the tensions between the X-Men/Mutants and the Inhumans during the 8-month gap that preceded all different Marvel.
But if they're all dead, how can there be any tension?
I just want to talk about this cover for a minute. Because it's nice. It's we have new Marvel exclusive artist Aaron Kuder doing the cover and interior art. But what's that green gem on Cyclops' left wrist?
Bling.
Since when does he have that? Just out of nowhere. That stood out to me.
Ooh, right there.
Yeah, right there. For those watching on the video podcast, as you all should be. Also, let me remind people, if you ever want to watch the episode live each week, you can just go to theclicknation.com/live. So, being the former X-Men fan as I am and was, I was greatly looking forward to reading this issue. Of course, it has two co-writers who I'm a big fan of, Jeff Lemire and Charles Soule. But I was kind of let down by this issue. Of course, the first issue just sets up the drama and the tension between both groups, even though they don't come into contact with one another. But it was sort of like two different coins. One side, you had the X-Men discovering that the Terrigen Mist causes harm to mutants. Is that Cyclops crying?
Yes. I'm adding tears of sorrow.
Yeah. The X-Men discovering that the Terrigen Mist causes death, basically, to the mutants and the mutant race, while on the other side of the coin, you had the Inhumans who are going around the country, traveling along with the Terrigen Mist, encountering countries that are finally embracing the Terrigen and not trying to evacuate to get away from it. And then we kind of get a little quick confrontation with a group of Hydra agents and a new Inhuman being born or cocooning out of their cocoon or stasis pod, who we haven't seen before. So it makes you wonder, if we haven't seen this guy between now and 8 months, then does this person just not make it to the current day status? We don't know. And they also sacrificed a long-running, long-standing former X-Man in this issue to show you how grave the stakes are for the X-Men.
Yeah, but did they really?
Well, I mean, there's always ways to get around death. Yeah, even when it's the death of X-Men.
Especially with that particular X-Men. Oh, by the way, there was this aspect of the character hidden somewhere else that everybody forgot about, and he can reemerge later.
Right. So this person was on Muir Island, which is where the X-Men traveled to, where they got the distress signal. I had to question the group of X-Men that were chosen to go on this mission. I mean, you had sort of regulars, you had Cyclops and Emma and Magic, Stepford Cuckoos, I can even understand, and Iceman. But like Goldballs being included, who just looked so out of place there. Goldballs being
He's busy in another book anyway, right? So...
Well, technically this isn't the past, so it makes sense.
Well, then we know he survives.
Right. And actually, a couple of these characters do, since we know some of them are in books running currently, like Magic and Iceman. It's just Emma, Cyclops, and the Stepford Cuckoos we have to wonder about. So when they arrive on Mirror Island, they find the facility filled with dead mutants because of coming in contact with the Legacy Virus, the Terrigen Mist. That's a shout-out to, what, the 2000s?
Yeah, I was about to say, if it's not one, it's the other. It's another.
And then there was some, like, weird art and writing sections of this book. Like, there was one part for the art, like, when the Inhumans are battling the Hydra agents, Crystal gets shot. And what we see in the one panel, she's bleeding from, like, a wound on her left side. But, like, when she's shot, the... Like, her body kind of contorts in this weird angle where, like, her body's twisted where her back is facing forward, but her head is still facing forward also. It just looked awkward. And then, like, Magic, she has, like, the voice of, like, a young teenager where, like, every sentence, everything out of her mouth ended with an exclamation point for the majority of her caption boxes or her letter, what do you call those? Letter balloons?
Word balloons?
Word balloons. Yeah.
Caption boxes. You know, my thing was, I knew that this was going to explain what happened in the past, but I kind of expected it to be set in the present with flashbacks, not necessarily be an entirely flashback book. And I felt disappointed because they're, you know, talking about the cloud and, you know, this and that. And I'm like, well, we know all this. Like, where's the exciting new part of this story? Like, we're just getting stuff that we either already knew or we were able to infer from other titles. So as we're going through the story, it's like, well, I guess, you know, like the death of this one character kind of means something, and there's an introduction of another character that we apparently don't see in the present day, so something's going to happen with him. But otherwise, it just didn't feel like there was anything going on in this book to get excited over.
Right. Yeah, I think it's supposed to all be set up in the past to show you what happened with Cyclops and why he's not around anymore. And then we kickstart the, was it, Inhumans versus X-Men event crossover that starts in December.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just not super excited by this.
Nope. Hmm. And I mean, it's only 4 issues, and I think the second issue comes out in 2 weeks, so I guess they are going to fly through this quickly. Hopefully it leads somewhere interesting.
It probably won't.
what else we got for this week?
It's like we kick off with a big title and it's just not exciting. We're all just kind of like, meh.
Yeah. Well, let's go to another big title that actually was pretty good. Champions number one.
All right. Yeah, I like this.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but my son did, and he said It's probably his new favorite since Nova is going away and Spidey is going away. So with those two books going away, Champions is now going to be his new favorite ongoing.
Good. Okay. So the series is based around, this takes place, for those who don't know, after the events of Civil War II, which it does a good job of not spoiling what happens in that.
But you have references. You kind of get a sense of, you know, what.
And for those who've been reading the main series, you know, the last issue ended with Miles Morales, Spider-Man, looking to play a major role. So we see him here, so obviously he survives. He makes like a quick reference to, you know, if anyone should be not concerned, if anyone should have any feelings with how, you know, the fallout of Civil War, it's him. But then they quickly just move on after that statement.
And clearly there was something, because they, for whatever ends up happening, that caused you know, them to have something between each other we haven't seen yet. And I'm going to assume it happens either in Avengers or in Civil War II, because they kind of hesitantly come together. And they even, except for that one panel where they actually, it looks like they flash back to, you know, to something that's probably going to happen. Or something that's gonna, that we were going to see in a while.
What scene was that? Was that where Ms. Marvel quit?
No, not that. But after that, when they met each other, and Kamala said she's quit, and then there was a panel of finally flying off.
That's right. Yeah. So we kickstart the issue with Kamala Khan at home, spending more time with her family because she's kind of given up her Avengers duties. And then we see why she gave them up, because we flash back to the Avengers taking on the Wrecking Crew, I think.
Yes.
You know, standard generic villains that anytime you need a super group, it's like them or the Fearsome Five or Foursome or whatever. The Avengers, of course, win. They're without Tony Stark because no one is mentioning what his status is after Civil War II.
Just ain't gonna be there.
Yeah. There's a lot of property damage to parts of New York City that Kamala would like the Avengers to, you know, help repair some the engine or the train tracks. And Sam Wilson replies back out, you know, there's no engineers on the team since Stark's not there. So there's just Sam's pretty much like, it's someone else's problem now.
And also there was a food truck that Deadpool would be really, really hurt about seeing in a bad state. So, but here's my thing with this. Okay, there's no engineer to other little, but there is a specific group of people that handles this type of stuff.
But they're like, and then last time we saw them in whatever miniseries that was, actually it's a miniseries tied to Civil War II, right? The damage control?
Yeah. Wait, what did they have a?
They were in one of the choosing sides, I think.
Oh, that is right. You're right.
Yeah. Because I did read that story.
Yeah, neither did I. Yeah.
But anyway, so she gets mad and quits. She texts Miles and Sam, who they all meet up and they decide, you know, they're fed up with the grown-ups, but they're, you know, the world still needs heroes to look up to, so they decide to start their own band. So and they call
Kamala
up.
Kamala kind of slips because she's like, yeah, we could do this to show Captain Marvel. And then Sam was like, don't you mean the Avengers? I'm like, yeah, the Avengers.
We can show them. Yeah. So Miles knows a guy who ends up being the Totally Awesome Hulk. So they go meet up with him. He knows someone that could sort of be like they need a IT person, basically. Someone that can like monitor the web to let them know what events are going around the world that would best suit their involvement in.
Have we seen any prior knowledge of them two knowing each other? Or this is just as convenient as it seems.
No, he referenced Totally Awesome Hulk mentioned how he knows Viv Vision.
No. I mean, like, or now. Like, in his book or something.
Yeah. they play the same online video game.
Yeah.
So they go to the Vision's house. Vision. So this, it even kind of spoils the end of the Vision.
Exactly. And that's another thing. Yeah. And you can find it, because it's funny enough, because you can tell by the look on his face when they find out when Kamala and Sam and Miles realize where they are. They'd be like, oh,
yeah,
when Vision opens
the front door, and it's like he's sitting there in his little Mr. Rogers sweater vest outfit.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, clearly, you know, clearly he's coming out the other side of his book.
Yeah. But, well, we only see him and his daughter, so that's all we know for now.
Well, yeah, but he also says nobody's home, so I'm like, well, wait a minute. There's only one other person that was around, so...
Yeah. You know, there's inconsistent writing, so... Mm. They could just not be riding along the same path as Tom King's ending to Vision.
I suppose.
But either way, so she looks on the internet, finds some clowns, which is ironic since clowns are all in the news now.
Yeah, I know, right? And I've never heard of this Joker.
I hadn't either. Some clown that's a group of clowns, I should say, that's running some kind of like human trafficking ring. They go break it up. It gets picked up by social media. People are using the hashtag champions because Kamala or one of the other members mentions champions during a speech.
Kamala has a nice little speech about what, you know.
My only question is how would all four or five of their how would all five of them have notification or alerts on their phones to monitor the hashtag champions because of their phones all go off at their phones all go off at the same time they start checking they see all these tweets or social messages.
Off or did just see them because I mean you got to think they're all following each other.
But no, they all like I think Nova's phone goes off first is the one we see first panel. And then there's no panel of all the rest of them looking at their phones and Viv holding her hand up to read I guess on her hand.
Right.
Then the issue ends. Oh yeah, we also get during Kamala's big speech, we get like teases of like other potential young superheroes who could show up in future issues.
Right, one we know for a fact is going to be in. So,
the other member who's not shown here, which is Cyclops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they show him after the last page, but
so that was the issue. It was nice, fun read.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was it's not amazing how because clearly most of them work together, you know. Before, minus Hulk and Viv, but it was kind of clean the way they kind of came together with that.
I like the concept of Miles, Kamala, and Sam being this like trio and being so close. Mm-hmm. So like you can sort of like envision, you know, forecasting the future, like seeing, you know, them growing up and still being friends. So like I picture like, you know, Peter Parker and Johnny Storm type relationship. So mm-hmm. add a third person to the group. So
I was about to say, so you think Spider Friends or something?
Yeah, I know it reminds me of like Dragon Ball Z type stuff where it's like, you know, Gohan and being young and watching his progression as he gets older if comics decide to actually age these characters.
Yeah, but Gohan was kind of a punk, but anyway,
because comics.
Yeah, there you go.
They can always just go back into the future and bring back Miles and Sam and Kamala's younger selves, have the all new champions.
Oh no,
like Cyclops.
That was the wrong one. Anyway.
It actually fit. All right, what else we
but
got? Yeah, here?
But I was thinking it was kind of also a Young Justice thing about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, okay, they all end up quitting and then they end up starting this whole thing. It's not the exact same thing because there was slightly different circumstances going on.
I'm surprised they didn't go with Young Avengers.
Well, because that's a whole separate group of folks. And they probably why they didn't want to do that. So
it's not the first time they just. They keep using the Thunderbolts label over and over again with different people.
Well, yeah, but that's like Steel Series Squad. That membership changes all the time. Or, you know, with everyone.
These are all, they're almost all, we have, what, three former Avengers. And then you have your Hulk character. You have a Vision.
And their Vision, yeah.
So, hey, they've got Inhumans, Mutants, a Spider character, a Hulk character. Who are they missing? A Captain America iteration?
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. Hawkeye. Actually would have made it. Yeah, and the Hawkeye. So that's Champions number one.
Yeah, good stuff. It's particular click of the week.
First we have... how was Death of Hawkman number one?
I'm guessing I'm the only one that read it.
Yes.
You guessed correctly.
I want to read it. I just didn't get to it this week.
You know, it's funny because for the longest time, this was just simply solicited as Adam Strange and Hawkman. And it wasn't until a couple weeks ago that they announced the actual title was Death of Hawkman. So this book opens with Hawkman and Adam Strange after some battle somewhere. We don't know when and where, but they're bloody. Their outfits are torn. They're, you know, obviously they've suffered some sort of losses. They've been in some sort of big fight. And then it flashes back to Adam Strange being stuck on Earth. Trying to make people remember that he used to be a member of the Justice League. They go, oh, the one with that that animal guy. You know, yeah, Animal Man. Yeah, that one. You know, going through all that kind of funny stuff peppered throughout, but he finds out that the Zeta Beam has been beaming to Earth, just not to him. And it's been shooting to all these different places around the country. So he's trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. Why hasn't it been coming for him? He's been stranded on Earth. And eventually he gets popped back just in time to see the aftermath of some sort of terrorist attack on his home planet. And that's where the book ends. I mean, in a nutshell, skipping a lot of details, but in a nutshell, that's what the first issue is all about. So it's a lot of setup. There's not a lot of, you know, Hawkman or anything going on in there. It's more about Adam Strange in this one setting up to his meeting with Hawkman. But there's something big coming. You know, you can tell from the first couple pages when they're in this massive battle that something big has happened. And we know that there's been miniseries in the past talking about the war in between Hawkman's world and Adam Strange world, and how they've always been at odds with each other, and it looks like that's playing into this somehow. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm just going to go out on a limb here with it being a six-issue series. It's called The Death of Hawkman. I don't know that this is necessarily about the death of this character, Hawkman, as much as Hawkman is going to turn against his own people in the war against Adam Strange's planet, and he's going to be, you know, excommunicated, you know, blacklisted, whatever, from his home planet and his people. So I'm guessing it's more of a, if you want to say, like a metaphysical death of Hawkman, maybe. But it just doesn't seem like this is a series that's setting up to kill off the character. But it is interesting, and there's enough in there that even if you don't know Adam Strange, you're not familiar with him, it sets him up as a good character. Even if you've never read anything with him before and you're like, oh, he's just some C-lister from random archives of the DC universe, which I think, you know, a fair amount of people are going to be thinking, it does a good job of getting you to actually like the guy, to make him a guy that you feel bad for, because when he's stuck on Earth, he has no powers. He doesn't have any of his equipment. It's not until he gets, you know, zapped back home that he can get all of his gear back, that he can actually be a superhero again. So he's really just a guy just waiting for that moment when he can finally return home. And of course, you know, his wife, his father-in-law, the family, all of them live, you know, on the planet. So he's stuck on Earth away from everybody else. So it does a good job of setting the groundwork, making you care about the character going into this series. So, I mean, it definitely read much better than I expected. It did a good job of whetting your appetite for the battle that's to come and then, you know, jumping back. So I give him credit for building the story that way. The artwork is nice. It's just a good book overall. Pretty solid.
Now, here's my question. If they actually did go ahead and kill Hawkeye, would it be a big deal? I'm Hawkeye. Hawkman.
Yeah, they can kill Hawkeye. I don't care.
No! Would it be a big deal? I mean, would it be a great loss?
Well, the problem is that Hawkman is one of those characters that changes every 10 years. They give him a new background, a new history. He's an alien from another planet. No, he's a guy with magical Egyptian powers. No, he's a guy with nth armor. You know, they just keep switching them around. So if nothing else, being that it's, you know, DC Rebirth time and all that stuff, if nothing else, maybe they will discuss these different versions of Hawkman through the years, you know, parallel universes or shifting of the time stream or something in order to kind of hammer it all out. And maybe it's the death of all those other versions, so there's only like the one true version that remains. I like the character of Hawkman. I generally have. I think, I especially like his look. I think it's a cool looking character. Just a lot of times they don't know what to do with him because of, he might be a guy from outer space. He might be a guy with ancient Egyptian powers, you know? Right. If they kill him off, I hope it's only so that they can solidify what the character actually is and keep it consistent going forward. So, but I mean, yeah, technically they could kill him off. It wouldn't be that big of a deal because they can just go, oh yeah, this Hawkman in outer space died, but this guy just found this new tomb in Egypt and now there's another Hawkman, you know?
Right.
Yeah, they teased his death before in something that no one will remember back when there was that Stormwatch series. And I don't think it was an issue of Stormwatch. It was an issue of something else. Like, they blew up the Stormwatch.
Oh, yeah. That was, what was that?
Yeah. They blew up the Stormwatch, whatever, control center.
Oh, that was,
like, watchtower type thing. And he was a member of Stormwatch.
That was that one series that was set, like, wasn't it the one that was set 5 years in the future? With Brother Eye?
Yeah.
I can't think of what that one was called. The story that ended up doing absolutely nothing except moving the future version of Tim Drake into Batman Beyond, which they've already gotten rid of. So
I don't remember that. It was that weekly series.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Earth's End?
No, that was the
Future's End.
Future's End. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was at the beginning of... Yeah, that's right. It was at, like, the very first issue of that.
Because, actually, I was fine with that. If they kill off all of Stormwatch, I'm good. You know, that doesn't... I'm much more upset if they kill Hawkman himself, but if they kill him in order to get rid of Stormwatch, we're fine.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But, yeah, it's... Like I said, it's a good, solid book. I mean, there's nothing that's going to blow you away as being fantastic, but the art is solid, the story's solid. You'll feel for the character by the time you get to the end of the issue. Six issues, so they got plenty of time to tell a story, so it's good.
Okay. Let's jump around some more.
Let's stick with DC for a second.
What about He-Man Thundercats? Anybody else read that one?
Yeah, I read it.
Okay. Wait, did you read the He-Man Thundercats with He-Man and Lion-O or the He-Man Thundercats with all the villains on the cover?
The first one.
Oh, okay.
Actually, well, so I read it digitally, so it had both covers in it.
Ah, I gotcha. Yeah. All right.
I did not read it, so I have nothing to say.
This was... Okay, the first thing to note about this book is the narration, which is weird.
Yeah. I will say I haven't heard of the writer, I think, for this before. So, or is it two writers?
Yeah, it's two different writers. One of them is actually a producer who worked on the 2003 Turtles cartoon and the Turtles Forever animated movie. That had the Turtles going through all the different parallel universes, seeing all the different versions, the Archie Comics version, the old cartoon version, the black and white version. So he's the guy who worked on the TV side. On a lot of the Turtle stuff, and so they brought him in to work on this one since he was familiar with doing old TV properties and updating them. And so him and whoever the comic writer is working together to do the script. So anyway, that's where he comes from.
Gotcha.
So we start off with one, like I said, the narration. We go to, well, we start off with Lion-O defeating Mum-Ra making his way back to his tomb. Meeting with the ancient spirits of evil, who are like, you've failed a good many times, basically, but we're going to give you this other chance because, hey, here's this sword in this other universe that that will defeat your enemies once and for all. They set that plan in motion, which ends up being, and I hate to use this, well, I don't hate to use this, I'm talking about to use it anyway, an incursion between the worlds.
It is. Yeah. That's a perfect, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
This should be like in their Hanna-Barbera line. I guess they're not Hanna-Barbera characters.
No, I don't know how that would fit in there. But so basically the two worlds come together and causes some havoc between both of them. Before that actually happens, or right before that actually happens, it cuts to Eternia, where Adam is late for something that he was supposed to be at, you know, dealing with this follower and the other masters of the universe. And again, of course, he's there late and is a disappointment to his father, and they were having a conversation. And then that's when everything starts to happen. There's a quick scene about Adam saving his dad, King Randor.
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. And then he's about to. He's about to do his thing and become He-Man, and then suddenly the sorceress comes along and says, "Hold up, don't do that. You know, we need to some power. Somebody's looking for the sort of power, and we need to go and hide it at Grayskull." Turns out that's not sorceress.
Spoiler bell.
Yep. Oh yeah. Wait, that sounded really weird. But so spoiler alert: it is not the sorceress. It ends up being Mum-Ra, who not only takes the sword, but stabs Adam in the chest in the process, Mum-Ra's got the sword with Adam still on it and yes, talking to him, just, you know, exposition, like, you know, expositing like villains do, and just waving him around, this and that and the other, and the next thing you know, Adam touches the sword, says the power's in secret, and then becomes He-Man, with no scratches on him. The sword is out of his chest, he's a He-Man, and, you know, That is that. And then, Mum-Ra gets away with the sword, and I think that's pretty much it, because I can't remember what else happens after that.
Yeah, Mum-Ra takes the sword, and he disappears, yeah. And the ancient spirits of evil, like, okay, well, you finally came through on this, but we found someone who's better than you.
And right, and they double-crossed him.
Yeah, they double-crossed him and end up giving the power sword to Skeletor. And it looks Oh, go ahead.
No, I was about to say who in turn looks like ends up destroying Mum-Ra, who apparently can't die, but he disintegrates.
Yeah, well, he'll just reconstitute back in his pyramid thing. But you know, the whole thing of the transformation Adam into He-Man was always, you know, if you watched like the cartoon and stuff, he was always, you know, a little scrawnier as Adam.
Right.
When he becomes He-Man, he bulks up. So there was this transformation. So I can go along with the fact that he gets stabbed, you know, right through the chest, and so he calls out for the transformation and the magic that turns him into He-Man. Just He-Man does not have that wound because that wound was Adam's. Like, I can go along with that because yeah, the clothes right. change when he changes, you know, right. his whole body changes. Like, yeah, and it's a magic sword that turns him into a big buff dude. So I'm okay with a little bit of play as far as, you know, that goes.
That's the fun thing about that, though, because depending on, you know, who draws him or whatnot, he doesn't look that much more similar or, you know, maybe slightly less buff, but he doesn't look that much different from Adam.
Well, and that's also because He-Man himself, the whole He-Man universe and mythos changes right. with depending on if it's a comic or it's the cartoon show or it's the toys or it's the mini comics that came with the toys or it's the German audio books. Like, you know, everything has its own spin on the character and the universe and everything. So they play with it a little bit. I'm fine with that. The one thing, though, they did a good job of setting up the He-Man universe. Like, they take the Thundercats, they throw them around, they take the Power Sword, give it to Skeletor, which is what Skeletor's always been trying to do in the He-Man mythos. But then what does that leave for the Thundercats? Like, now they're going to fight Skeletor? Like, they're just now part of the He-Man story, and the Thundercats mythos at this point doesn't really seem to matter. So I'm just hoping that as the story moves forward, they can at least play the Thundercats back into it a little bit better. Because, like I said, right now, they're just basically the MacGuffin that moves the sword from He-Man to Skeletor, and that's all they really seem to be there for.
Right. Although, you know, it is first issue, I suspect, you know,
yeah,
they will throw some more in there, because you got to think the mutants are going to show up, and then, you know, Mumra's clearly probably not gone, and there's going to be... And, oh, yeah, because we did forget that Lion-O did use a Sight Beyond Sight and see, you know, kind of get a glimpse of what they were facing. So I suspect, you know, there's going to be a meet-up and team-up.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering if this is going to turn into one of those massive things where Mumra will then reach out and discover Hordak and make some deal with Hordak to turn right. against Skeletor. Like, I'm wondering if they're just going to keep building. Like, what other villains, what other massive, you know, thing can we pull out? So, right. you know, I enjoyed it. It was definitely one of those things where I could see myself, be 8 years old, having the action figures on my living room floor playing out a similar type storyline, you know? So so I was fine with it. I thought it played out really well. The one thing to me that's weird is Freddie Williams, the second, who did the artwork. He does all of his artwork digitally. And if you can go on YouTube and watch him go, and it's amazing, you know, what he's able to pull off. But sometimes he gets just a little out of hand. Like, if you especially look at this cover, look at He-Man's arm. And, like, those muscles, like, what? Like, I'm looking at some of those muscles. Those are tumors. Like, I don't know, you know, where those growths come from. But, you know, obviously there's something wrong there. But,
right.
But, you know, overall, I thought the story was good. I mean, the artwork's nice. It's colorful. It's got a nice pop to it that he always puts into it. And he's the same artist that did the Batman Turtles series from earlier this year. So people familiar with that one, it's got that same look and feel to it. So I think anybody who enjoyed that series is obviously going to enjoy this. Anybody who maybe was disappointed in the He-Man series that we saw in the past from DC, the ones that started 2 or 3 years ago that turned out not to be so good. Yeah, those were not so great. The Eternity War one was actually pretty good. And actually, I think the writer on this is the writer from Eternity War. And that one was actually the one out of the, like, three different series that they did that most people seem to agree was actually pretty good. So, I'm glad to see that he's on board with this. This kind of, I don't know if you say it makes up necessarily for the mistakes that they made in those other books, but I think this one fans will be happy with as it goes through.
Right, and it doesn't seem like, granted, I know I didn't read any of those. It doesn't seem like it's taking place in that version of He-Man.
Right, yeah, and it doesn't need to. I mean, like I said, it's the He-Man universe is different depending on if it's the old cartoon or the new cartoon or the movie or the comics or whatever. Everything's different. Its own, you know, the way they redo Batman all the time for movies and TV shows, it's the same way. So yeah, I'm fine with that as far as that goes.
Yeah, and as I recall from what I heard, that Eternity War got kind of gritty.
Yeah. That was one nice thing about it, is it took it a little more seriously, which was good. It was less the 80s cartoon and more of the early 2000 cartoon with the way it played things up a little bit better. So yeah, overall, I enjoyed this. I'm definitely looking forward to more.
Yeah, I like that. I thought it was a good read. It was just the weird thing about it was, like, going back to it, is the narration. Who we end up finding out was Skeletor talking,
but it takes a long time to figure out that that's who's talking, and so it just it feels like it doesn't make sense for a long time because you don't know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and the way that he's talking is like, that doesn't even sound like. And I mean, once you find out who it is, it's like, that doesn't even sound like. Like, it just sounds like that's like a fourth wall thing, and it's just like somebody. Like one of us talking like that, you know,
right.
in putting it in place in this fantasy universe. But I'm like, oh, was Skeletor talking like all of that? I'm like, okay, that's strange. But
yeah, think more of Frank Langella than the old 80s cartoon.
Fair enough. There you go. All right, you got me on that one.
All right.
Let's see where so we got up. Now.
Well, let's jump around. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say we can talk about the Monster Men real quick. Let's see, we had two. I'm trying to remember which one came first. I think it was Batman and then Nightwing, right?
Yes. At least that's how the beginning parts of it went.
Yeah. One criticism I've had for Monster Men is that it's really been set up as you have to read every issue. It doesn't work issue to issue of their each standalone series. But I think this issue of Batman did a fairly good job. If you've only been reading Batman, you haven't been reading Detective, you haven't been reading Nightwing, you're not familiar with all that other stuff, I think this is the one issue. I mean, it's Tom King. He's our boy. He actually does a good job of setting it up, explaining everything, recapping everything, throwing in those conversations where, you know, as they're finishing up what they're doing, they, you know, mention why they're doing it in the first place, which is good for people who have not been reading the entire series. So I at least give credit to Tom King for that, and putting that story together for all the people who are not buying each and every chapter of this on the stands. Having said that, that's about the only positive I have for this crossover.
I haven't read the parts for this week, but I will say I really enjoy Riley Rossmo's art in the first part of this, the crossover. So looking forward to seeing it in part four, as it says on the cover here.
But beyond the artwork, what do you think of the story?
Story, I'm just meh too, to be honest. It's the first quote-unquote crossover of the DC Rebirth era. It really doesn't feel like the only real development took place in the part three before this, which was, Detective Comics last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it came out. And that's where Nightwing and Gotham Girl turned into monsters. That's like the first thing that really happened in this series, and it took three issues for that to happen.
Well, I can tell you most of that's over when you're done reading this week, so... By the time we get to Nightwing, they're cured, and Nightwing is the guy that actually figures out what's going on. And these monsters that they're fighting, the monsters end up coming together as like some sort of proto-matter biological Voltron thing into this one giant monster. And Nightwing is the one who figures out... I mean, I guess we know that Hugo Strange is behind it, but he figures out why Hugo Strange has picked the people that he's picked and why he's... doing this, why he has these monsters coming out and coming together. So you finally get some answers as to why this crossover is happening and what the story is that's going into it, and we're setting up for the final chapter that comes out next week in Detective. But still, you know, having said that, I'm going to be glad when this is over, and I'm pretty much going to forget about it, and going forward, most likely just pretend it never happened.
I was going to ask, given that last cover that you just showed, did they change his name to Night Wolf? But that doesn't play given what you just shown.
Yeah, he looks more like a bat creature thing.
Yeah, the last one, the one you just showed kind of plays it a little bit better.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just not a big fan of this whole... And it's also one of those where it's like, they've been turned into monsters, we have to fix them. Go grab the... And then you could tell, like, at some point in the script, it probably just said, go grab the, and then there was just a blank, you know? And it said, and then we'll make sure that we fix their DNA when we realign their blank in order to make everything work out. And then they had to go back and be like, okay, what random words can I throw in here to make this work? The tectoscrenometer or whatever, you know, come up with a name of some sort of device that can mix the DNA. Oh, all we have to do is mix the DNA back, you know? It's one of those type things where they solve the problem by... making up the most random pseudoscience thing and throwing it out there. So, but you know, I mean, hey, comics, right?
Comics.
Anyway.
Well, that sounds like fun.
So,
anybody read Cyborg number 2?
No.
It's on my pile. I didn't get to it in time.
Okay. So, after the events of, the cover says it all, Vic pretty much, Vic is fighting Kilgore, because there's a percent sign in the middle of his name for some ungodly reason.
Oh, Kilgore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the most of the issue is pretty much them fighting, but Kilgore comes off to me like General Chang from Star Trek VI, because, you know, he's just talking and talking and quoting Shakespeare and you know, saying, hey, I can read your mind because I can take control of any, of any electronics, electricity, blah, blah, blah. And they're just fighting and, kind of going back and forth. But it ends up with them going back to the church that was mentioned in last issue, I believe it was, and continuing to fight there, where there is someone there. Cyborg is a choice; it has to make a choice by the end of this issue, and he makes that choice and goes through with it. The fight comes to a conclusion after that, and then at the end there is a twist. So I said all that without giving the whole thing away. but it was a good read. There were some parallels in there. That was quite interesting. I'm like, I guess you could make that case that while the villain was talking about stuff. And then the whole cyborg, is he more man than machine thing comes back up, and does he have a soul if he is more machine than man? And
right,
the whole, the humans don't owe you anything because you're more machine. And Kilgore is, while he's fighting him, just basically trying to get him to recruit, Cyborg for this other person that we saw at the end of the last issue, but he never says anything about who that person is. So there's a whole lot of that talking going through. And like I said, at the end there's not much of a twist, but something that thought there was is not what it is.
Well, like I said, I enjoy this series a whole lot more than the last series. Even though we're only a couple issues into it, I already like the tone of it and the feel of it. And it's a book, I actually have a paper copy, to get to. Just had a lot of stuff going on today, didn't get a chance to get to it. So it'll be probably one of the first things I read tomorrow.
Yeah, and I also got a physical copy of it also. But yeah, I think you may still enjoy this one.
Alrighty.
I just remembered I am caught up on this series, except for, because I read The Rebirth and number one. I just haven't gotten to the one this week.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So I guess to round out, I can round out my DC while we're still here. Future Quest number 5. So I had to go back to issue 4 because being that it comes out once a month, it kind of gets lost. I have a physical copy, luckily, that I remember to go and that I go and get. And that was the thing that kind of made me remember that was out. But it seems like it's so long since the comes out, then you just forget what happens, and I didn't necessarily need to. That said, we find various members. Or it looks like the couple of teams kind of split up because they're looking for some fossils. You got Dr. Quest and Birdman and whoever his control. Well, Dr. Quest and Birdman is off in one area, and then you see Johnny Quest and Jan and Blip and Haji. And this kid that they find during one of the course of the issues, split up with Race, going to find the fossils. And this caveman, which I think is, I'm not sure. I know the character is somebody I probably should. But it's somebody that's definitely had a show, but I just can't remember. His name is Ugg, but I can't remember what show it's off of. It doesn't really matter at this point. But they're off trying to find these fossils. They end up finding the fossils, but Fear was also there in front, ahead of them. Jezebel Jade is there, and a fight breaks out because of this, and they are controlling some animals, which end up getting used. And at the end of this, and throughout the course of this, we get some backstory on a hero who ends up coming back at the end of this story in a new way, because the fossil ends up turning one of the party into this new hero, new slash old hero, at the end of the first part of the issue. The second part of the issue has to deal with the Impossibles, who you see on the cover. Apparently, they are on some TV show, but they use their powers and nobody really knows this. This girl comes along, under the guise of getting an interview with the group. And they're trying to play it off because it's like, well, we don't normally give interviews and don't say anything, you know, anything, whatever, because they're, you know, supposedly their thing is a secret. But the interview is about, ends up being about what transformed them into the Impossibles in the first place. And they're still trying to play it off. But apparently this person who is on the cover with the big C, the girl with the C on her costume, comes to find out that she is also powered just like them from the same accident that turns them into the Impossible, which has to do with some them being on some cruise ship. Yep, her right there. And then she goes up against the line and then boom. Anyway. So
you're underwater, Roddy.
Yeah, well, that joke was underwater anyway.
I'm guessing by the C on her costume that she's part of the Criterion Collection, but I could be wrong on that.
You would be actually, but hey, that's pretty good. Yeah. So wait, how do I sound now?
Not underwater anymore, by the way.
Okay, no, you're fine, good. You're fine. Good. Check your settings, folks. I don't know whether that tends to work. So yeah, like I said, she interviews them. She kind of recounts the accident that turned them all into the Impossible. And then they go, then they find out that she also has powers just like them, like I said. And their powers apparently has something to do with Fear, who is also looking for the other artifacts from, you know, as a part of the bigger story and some experiment they did out at sea in that they got caught up in apparently. And then at the end of this, there's a big rock-looking person who I have no idea is, ends up finding the crew because of her powers, or tracking her powers, and looks like they're about to scrap next issue or whenever this takes back up. And that's the end of this issue. So it's interesting how they're kind of tying the story together. Like, these the Impossibles are not along with the main group that's doing the thing, but I suspect after this they probably will join up. And they're also apparently tied to some one of the members. They're also maybe a part of the same group that Birdman is a part of, Internation, I believe this is called, or at least they're training to be, it looks like. So like I said, it all ties back into the bigger story on that front. But it's still enjoyable, though. I'm still, it's not the fastest paced story that's going, but I guess since this is an ongoing, like there is some action that happens here and there, but getting to somewhere significant hasn't happened yet because they're still pretty much in the, yeah, this stuff going on and we don't fully know what's happening, but it, all of the pieces are coming together and you got Dr. Zan and over here and everything's putting out. So enjoy it.
I can get to my DC read of the week and possible quick click of the week, Midnighter and Apollo number one. So this was a very fun read. There's a nice little opening sequence of Midnighter being the crap out of some bad guys through a train station, or a train from, so it's like one of those big two-page spreads where it starts on one side of the train and goes all the way through the other, and he's like stomping guys' heads into the ground and all you see is just the blood splatter going everywhere, and shoving, taking one of the train like guardrails that you hold while you're standing up in the train and breaking that and stabbing it through like three villains lined up for him and whatnot. And then there's like quiet moments with him and Apollo. Henry Bendix, I guess, is like the main villain that Midnighter is always going up against. So he, at least right now, appears he's the antagonist here in the 6-issue miniseries. And it looks like Apollo is taken off the board. So, and actually, it looks like he might be in hell at the end of the issue. So that's sort of Bendis's plan to separate the two, so he can take care of Midnighter. So, I like the way Orlando writes Midnighter because he always has the best comebacks ever in comics.
Wait, did you say Bendis
or Bendix?
Oh,
Bendix. I think the guy's name is.
Okay, that's about to say.
So, fun issue, and that's my DC for the week.
I've got one issue of Superman to add. Before I get into the issue, though, everybody watching on video, you really got to see this. The alternate cover here. Is it just me, or does it look like he's supposed to be at a turntable here? There's something about this. Some ad for DJ Hero 3 or something, I think, is going to use this artwork.
Hey, I'd be with it.
I almost want to Photoshop it in if I can find the right picture to use it.
Do it.
But... Superman number 8. It's called Escape from Dinosaur Island Part 1. Superman and his son get pulled into this crazy nexus, this island from Lost type of place full of monsters and dinosaurs. And as they're going through, they find a dog skeleton. They find a bunch of sandbags on a beach and a machine gun. They start finding, all these... there's a skeleton of a Tyrannosaurus Rex with the body of a person inside. There's a World War II tank that still has the bodies inside. And they're trying to figure out what's going on. And so they're going through this whole issue, just uncovering all this weird stuff as they're stuck on this island. And they finally get to a cave at the end, and they find a note left by the last surviving member of the Losers. And with a note that this issue is dedicated to Darwin Cook. So what this book is doing is it's actually tying into New Frontier. If you read Darwin Cook's New Frontier miniseries, one of the things in that book was monsters attacking in the Midway, Pacific Islands, and the Losers, as a World War II fighting group, were thrown onto this mysterious dinosaur island, and they were never seen again. And the idea was that they had fought these dinosaurs, they'd gotten eaten, and they'd gotten, died from malnutrition and whatever. They were just stuck on this island in this pocket universe and could never escape. And so it turns out that that is now part of the reality in Rebirth, one way or another. Now, whether it becomes this whole pocket dimension thing, or if it's only like the alternate universe that the Losers get thrown into, where Dinosaur Island is like a bridge in between the world of the New Frontier and DC Rebirth, like who knows how it's exactly going to play out, but that's what this links up to. And plays in with that. And it actually, on the final page, is dedicated to Darwin Cook. So if you've read New Frontier, you are a fan of Darwin Cook, I highly recommend that you pick this up, you read through it, and you follow where their story is going, because they did an excellent job of playing with it for a long time. You weren't quite sure what was going on, what these things were. Like, you understood, like, okay, it's World War II guys and maybe some giant monsters on this island, but what's going on? But it's very clear when you get to the end that it's tying into that chapter from New Frontier. So I was actually kind of blown away when I got to that point, like, oh my gosh, they're actually going back to that and tying into it, which is really cool. I love when they play with that kind of stuff. So Superman 8, definitely a good read and definitely worth checking out, especially if you were a fan of Darwin Cook and a lot of his work.
I remember I watched the animated version. Is that note for note or
if I remember correctly, the animated version was pretty close, but there were some things changed just for time and not having to go into the background of all the characters and everything, but yeah, it was pretty close. I remember the art style was dead on,
right,
as far as the animation goes, but I think the story was truncated a little bit here and there.
Gotcha.
But still, if nothing else,
yeah, make sure you get some headphones for me. If you
especially with the glowing eyes, that's totally an exactly. Album cover,
Yeah, somebody's going to do that.
Gosh, I'm trying to think, what else did I...
Well, we can jump back over to Marvel for a second.
Yeah.
This Invincible Iron Man number 14 was the end of this particular arc, or volume of the series, I should say, as Tony Stark goes to an AA meeting. It's basically what the issue was. He's stressed out because of, the tension between himself and Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel. And normally he would talk to his friends about it to keep himself from turning back to the bottle. But his two best friends are dead because of everything in Civil War II, that being War Machine, James Rhodey, and Bruce Banner, the Hulk.
Which is weird, because he did actually end up talking to Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada or whatever the community
is.
Yeah, because there was an issue of, I can't remember what it was, that he actually talked to him. So it's kind of weird that he would have to go through a meeting, but I guess that's a separate thing.
Yeah. And I guess, I don't know how much of this was actual canon or something that was just created for this issue, but something tells me it probably was established before that Tony is Carol's, what do you call it, an AA sponsor? Tony is Carol's sponsor. So normally they would go to the same AA meetings, but since they're fighting each other, Tony decides to go to, if he finds another AA meeting to attend to, and he's got like the leather jacket on and the shades and the hat pulled over his head during the meeting, but Carol's still there doing the exact same thing. Tony gets up to leave when Carol goes into her, my name is Carol and I'm an alcoholic speech, And he doesn't realize it's her until she actually gets up and starts talking. And he like gets up and leaves during it. And once she's done, she goes outside and stops him. They have a civil conversation where they actually just talk out their issues, which is great for a Bendis book. No fighting, just a bunch of talking.
Actually, when my son got done with this, he goes, "I think I'm done reading Iron Man for a while." And I said, "Okay, I understand."
Yeah. That's all it was. It was so a meeting and then like a 10-page discussion between Carol and Tony outside the AA meeting.
Right. Okay, so the AA thing, if I remember correctly, was from either Mighty or New Avengers when I think Carol was still, she was Warbird at the time and she was actually drinking.
Okay. Yeah. It sounded too much like this is probably, there's probably a reason he's bringing this up.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, pulling it out of thin air. So that's pretty much the issue. Not much else to it. They, you know, thank fans for tuning into this volume. And if you want to find out what happens the issue ends with Tony's mother, something Armstrong, Amy Armstrong, his biological mother shows up to, I guess, whatever is left of Stark's business or tower. Friday greets her. They're having a nice discussion. She's asking, is Friday a real person? And then like Friday says like, oh no, like she gets like a news article, a news update. And she's like, oh no. And the mother's like, what's happened? You know, what happened? And Friday's like, you haven't heard. And it's like, you know, find out what happens to Tony Stark in Civil War II in stores now.
Huh.
Yeah.
Hey, and that wasn't me, ladies and gentlemen.
Agent 70 has joined us tonight.
What's up, everybody? Sorry for running a little bit behind.
No problem.
It's all good.
Well, let me talk about Moonshine here then for a second.
I was curious about this.
So this is set in the Prohibition era. There's a man in the Appalachian Mountains, backwoods, wherever. He makes the best moonshine anyone's ever tasted. And a mob boss from New York decides he wants to send one of his guys down to work out a deal because the shine is so good, he wants to be able to buy it, take it back up to New York, have his people go through it, maybe replicate it, and they'll sell it up in the New York territory and still have the source, you know, coming from the original guy. So they send this guy down to work out some sort of deal, and he, of course, is, I'm from the big city and you guys are all backwoods whoever's. But in the midst of all this, the FBI moves in to attack this guy still out in the backwoods, and they find it in the middle of night, and in the middle of the night, they get attacked by the creature you see here on this cover, this giant, some sort of cat, wolf, you know, you're not really sure exactly what it is, if it's a dog or a cat, or is it a, you know, I'm guessing it might be a werewolf. Mm-hmm. You don't really know what this thing is, but it comes out and attacks him in the forest, and apparently it's there to protect the guy who's making the shine, and there's something about the fact that his moonshine tastes so good. There's something else involved, you know, whether it's like magic or the pure source that he's coming from where these animals live or something. You know, you don't know exactly what's going on, but there's obviously more to it than what you find in the basic outline of the story. So it's really a book that's sold more on the atmosphere of what's happening, the Eduardo Rizzo artwork. If you remember, Azzarello and Rizzo worked together on 100 Bullets.
100 Bullets, yeah.
Yeah. So they're back together on here. And it is very much, it does a really good job of capturing that 1920s feel, that Appalachian backwoods feel. I've seen enough episodes of Moonshiners that when it showed his still, I was like, yep, that looks right. So it looks like they've actually, you know, done their homework, put everything together really well. And the story, it gives you enough in the first issue that you understand who the key players are and you know that something bigger is going to happen from both sides so that you know that the mob boss is not going to be happy that he's not getting the deal that he wants from this guy. And so of course that's going to lead to, you know, mafia style shootout, gang war, takedown, whatever. But then on the other side, you know that this backwoods guy and whatever power he holds, you know, all the people around there are either, you know, in his family, or they work for his family, or they work for someone who gets money from his family, you know, so his family is tied into this whole community where he's at, and whatever this creature is, if there's more of them down there, you know that something big is coming from him and his side as it gets into this battle. So you really get this feel like there's something, you know, that's going to be building and coming out as the story goes along. So again, it's built on the atmosphere. You know, the fight's coming. It looks good. So overall, it was a really good, strong first issue.
Nice.
So there you go.
I didn't realize it was a top-notch creative team on it.
Yeah, and I actually have to admit, I did buy this Frank Miller cover. I do like Frank
Miller. I was going to say that looks very much like the wolf creature that's in 300.
Mm-hmm.
That immediately came to mind.
Azzarello and Frank Miller are apparently really good friends in real life. So he got him to do the variant cover, so I decided to snatch that one up.
Cool.
But yeah, it's a good book.
Cool.
Oh man, Spidey. Man, I was so happy with this issue. I love this issue so much. And then I found out that Spidey's ending. Like, I didn't realize it was ending. I didn't pay any attention.
Was this the last issue?
I don't know if this is the last one or there's one more. I'm thinking there's going to be one more just to round it out at 12 for the trades.
Well, that's why I'm wondering, because they've, you know, the last couple of things have ended at 11.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's weird. It doesn't, I don't remember it ending with some sort of solid, like, that's it, story's over. So I'm thinking there's going to be one more because you don't get a definite feel like it's over. But the story in this is so good, because what it is Peter Parker notices that Galactus is attacking New York. Like, oh, hey, I better get in the middle of that fight. So he rushes out to get into the middle of that battle, and Scorpion attacks him. And so he's fighting with Scorpion, and it's basically, you know, like, I don't have time for this. Like, you are not important. Do you not see this giant purple guy eating the city? Like, leave me alone. I got to go take care of this. And this is during the period where Scorpion was actually trying to turn his life around, so he hadn't been a villain for a long time. Right. And so it doesn't make any sense that he's doing it now, which, you know, leads to another plot point. But that, as far as like the Spidey story is going on, but then the Peter Parker story is that we've seen for the last several issues that, of course, he's got the crush on Gwen Stacy. She's hanging out with Flash Thompson all the time. He started mentoring Gwen Stacy in math, tutoring her, helping her out, and that's, you know, trying to be his in to get closer to her. And Flash Thompson was going to fail math and be kicked off the football team, so Parker had to tutor him as well. And so this issue is also the issue of the big math test. So this book being written for all ages, you know, most of us reading this don't really sympathize with having to take a math test, you know, when we go through our daily lives. But with the story of Spider-Man, Peter Parker, and everything going on, it's just a fun way that it brought, with this being the younger Spider-Man, brought in that element and having that hanging over his head at the same time that he's fighting Scorpion, trying to get rid of Scorpion so he can go fight Galactus, you know, who's trying to take over the city. Like, all of this stuff is hitting, you know, right now. And it's like, on the one hand, it's the worst day of his life because all of this stuff is happening. But on the other hand, Gwen Stacy's talking to him. She likes him. You know, she's happy to be around him. She wants to hang out more. And that makes it such a happy, glorious day in his life. So it is in all ages. They say it's rated T for teen, but that's only because people get punched in the face and they fight. But, I mean, really, if your kids are watching Saturday morning cartoons, they're watching the same stuff that's happening here. There's no, you know, sex. There's no swear words. There's no blood and gore, nothing like that. It is very much a kid-friendly book. And it's very well done. I personally love this era in Spidey's life so much more than where he's at now in the, you know, the main titles. So I love this book. I love this particular issue, and I'm so sad that it's going away. It's like the second Spider-Man book that I love that's going away after Web Warriors, and it really breaks my heart, especially with how good this particular issue is. So this is another one of those where even if you haven't read any of them, or maybe you just picked up the last one because it had Captain America in it,
right?
You know, you can pick this up and follow the story no problem. You know, it's very new reader friendly the way it always is, which, again, is another reason why it's a shame that it's going away. Because it is very well done.
It looks like 12 might be the last one.
Yeah. Well, so at least we get one more issue out of it before it goes away. But still,
all your favorite Spider-Man titles going away.
I know. Oh, well. Just have to read more Batman.
So is that everyone's rapid fire?
I got two more that go together. Okay. But I'll let Roddy go ahead. Roddy, you got one?
I was going to say, you want to get through some of yours? Or?
Well, I was just looking at what was on everyone's list to see what hadn't been covered yet. I'm surprised to see that no one's got Jessica Jones #1 on their list.
Nope.
Wow.
It'll get read. It just hasn't gotten read yet.
It was a very surprisingly engaging issue. I think my familiarity with the character has obviously been enhanced by the Netflix show. And I think what Bendis is actually going for is a kind of adapting that characterization. Although I don't have a before and after, so I really can't compare. But the tone of the character very much struck me like the Netflix show. There's an interesting twist to this. I will not spoil, but there's an interesting twist to this opening story especially since we kind of understand her to be in a certain place. And we find her very much out of this particular status quo that we've come to know her in. You know, and it does involve a certain other Netflix hero that she's associated with in the Marvel Universe. So that's it. That's the only thing. That's the only part.
Howard the Duck?
I did get that hip hop cover, by the way. I did pick that up. I do have that here.
All right, that reminds me of something I forgot to mention earlier, but I'll bring it up in a little bit.
Yep. Let's see what else. I see you guys read Doctor Strange.
We didn't talk about it yet, though.
All right, let me hit something else that's not on anyone's list. Amazing Spider-Man number 19. Very quickly, this new you storyline takes a tragic twist in this issue. You know, there's lots of debate going on, you know, whether or not this, you know, spoiler alert here. This new you storyline is Jackal centered, which means there's some variation of cloning involved. And with that said, you know, I'm not trying to spoil the whole thing, but you can kind of see where this is going. This is actually a really dramatic issue. There's a lot of cool twists in this, but like I said, it's kind of a tragic twist at the end of the issue. Did you guys talk about Death of X, number one?
Yep.
That's what we started with.
Okay. Yeah, that was...
We didn't like it.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, I really don't know why we're retreading a lot of this ground in the first issue. It seems like we're all very familiar with where we are, you know, with that part, with that idea. It's just, you know, showing us exactly who were the first victims of the MPOX. So, you know, I was pretty disappointed in that. I thought we'd be jumping right into some more.
Yeah, that's one thing I mentioned when we talked about it, is I thought it was going to be set in the modern time, whatever, with flashbacks as to what led them there, and instead it's an entire issue that's a flashback. Like, it's all just set in the past.
Right. No, that's definitely what I was getting at. I didn't think we were going to have an entire issue of this.
Although, here's a question for you. Why is he wearing a Power Rangers communicator to talk to Zordon on his wrist?
Oh, no.
He's a Bill Hader fan.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I didn't even notice that. So I heard, as I came on, I heard Tim talking about Invincible Iron Man number 14. That was just okay.
It's the Alcoholics Anonymous issue.
Let's see. Doctor Strange number 12. You hadn't talked about it yet. I was just mentioning that. Let's see. What else? Oh, I'll get through very quickly. Ragnarok number 10. I know no one else is reading this, but believe it or not, this is actually fairly new reader friendly because I haven't read the last two issues, I think. And I picked this up. I'm like, oh, okay. I understand what's going on. So it was pretty, you know, it was pretty.
I'm surprised this thing is still running. I remember when it started.
Listen, Simonson has to take a break every now and again. So, you know, like health issues. He's an older dude.
Like, I will admit that I've not kept up on this, but it's one of those that every time I see it, I go, oh, I need to be reading this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I instantly forget about it. But it's like one of those books that, like, I really would like to read this. I just never think about it until, like, you know, you're sitting in the car at 11:30 at night coming back from something. It's like, oh, right, I wanted to read that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And let's see, what else? I think that's basically it, unless anyone's... did you guys speak about Champions number one?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So...
Yeah, we did.
We liked it.
Speaking of, here's a hip-hop cover.
Yes! Iron Flag. Earlier.
Yep.
The Wu coming through.
Wait a minute. Did nobody read Cage?
I tried.
I haven't tried.
I tried. So now, here, a couple of things. One, it's an awesome cover homage to Bad by LL Cool J, mm-hmm. right?
But cover is like the best part of the book.
Yeah, this alternate cover, right? It, you know, shout out to Classic Materia and the Classic Team Up. Myself, Roddy Cat, and Classic Materia did a classic team up part one of a special two-part crossover with the Comic Book Chronicles talking about the Luke Cage Netflix series. And coming off the, watching that entire series, coming off of, you know, a more modern take on the character that we've read in the, you know, the recent, you know, let's say 5 years, 10 years, it was tough kind of switching back into this kind of period piece that Genndy Tartakovsky has written and drawn. I'm going to try to sit down and read it, but I, you know, like after a couple of pages, I just couldn't make my, I couldn't make it through, and I just had to put it down and flip to something else.
So when this book was even announced, I was like, this is not even necessary. And I told myself I wasn't even going to buy it. And then I ended up because of the stupid hip hop cover anyway, but,
cause it's a nice cover.
Yeah. And I saw some of the preview pages. I'm like, I might still try to read it.
I think it got made because I remember Newsarama posted something saying or showing like some art from Genndy Tartakovsky saying like how the book was supposed to come out like it feels like almost a decade ago, but you know, it was one of those things where the project just fell through and whatnot, and right. People saw the images and they were like, oh man, Marvel, why'd you, you know, canned his series, yada yada yada, rabble rabble rabble.
Oh, yeah, Marvel, I think that was in that article when we talked about it. Yeah,
and then Marvel saw the response it was getting. It was like, well, let's try to get this thing out. And now it's out, and now people are like, oh, we ate it. So they gave the people what they wanted, and the people turned on them. Yeah. I like how they have this as a part of the, you know, Marvel Now logo and banner on the cover. It has nothing. It's not
definitely not now.
It's like all out of continuity and everything, but it's Marvel Now.
That's funny. That's a good one, Dirt. That's funny. So yeah, so that actually covers what I read this week. We could wrap up rapid fire now.
Yeah. Well, I got a couple then since we brought them up. Doctor Strange number 12. I enjoyed this. Let's see. So.
Well, the Baron Mordo stuff is awesome in this.
Exactly. So this is pretty much a week in the life of, well, half of a week in life of Doctor Strange. We start off with him fighting the thing that was in the basement that escaped, who now has a name, which has a really interesting unbreakable line at the end of their fight, because he's basically just like, okay, now we know who you are, and now my name is Mr. Misery, I think his its name is. So... there is that, and then it goes into the Baron Mordo stuff where, you know, Mordo comes to the Sanctum Sanctorum after Strange is like, yeah, I got to find him, and, you know, now that he's out, and, you know, after finding out that he was still around, that he was around, comes to the fight, comes to the house, there's a fight, Dr. Strange hits him with an apple, you know, because he's using, you know, whatever magic is left, and then Mordo goes into the kill, for the kill, and Doctor Strange disappeared because of the cloak that he has on now, which sends him to another old friend, Rogues Gallery, that at the end of the issue was like, well, geez, all of them are coming out. Because first we had Mordo, and then Dormammu gets alluded to because Mordo's working for him. And then, yes, go ahead and spoilers alert, at the end of the issue, Nightmare shows up.
Right. So. We're bringing out all, you know, it's a reunion of all of Dr. Strange's foes.
Especially given that the page after the last page, because they show what's coming in the next issues or whatever, you'll see, and I think the arc is, or either the issue's going to be called Rogues Gallery or stuff like that, but you see a couple few other people that looks like they're going to be showing up.
Yeah, Rogues Galore.
Yeah. So that was pretty decent. And Scarlet Witch number 11, which I'm still enjoying. The art is great. What is her name? Lila DeLuca's art is great. Wanda is trying to find out about her history and the history of her people. We get some backstory. Some of it we knew, some of it we don't know about her parentage. In fact, this issue kind of goes towards cementing that. So it's still some of the same stuff that we know, but with the added wrinkle of Wanda's natural mother, which has been a part of this series a little bit, but now she's on the track of that. She Wanda meets up with an old friend of her natural mother's who tells the tale of the high evolutionary kidnapping Wanda and Pietro and what presumably happens to her mother. Also, it brings up the history with the Maximoffs, which at the end of this issue ends up being not necessarily rewritten, but another wrinkle just kind of comes back into it in the form of spoiler alert,
Uh-oh.
Wanda's adopted mother, who happens to be her aunt, apparently. So Django and Maria Maximoff are her aunt and uncle, which she was given to. And apparently, as Pearl said in the past, you know, there was a fire because there was an old issue of Avengers where Django comes looking for Wanda and Pietro, and there's a big issue with Wendigo Mountain, and he ends up dying. And this is the story of, you know, that story gets told. But and we are left to presume that Maria had died in the fire that was set because of, you know, when it was a kid, there was a big fire in the Romani camp that, most specifically Django and Maria's house was set on fire because of the fact that, you know, they knew their kids were special. And that whole time being as problematic as it was, apparently Maria's still alive. And at the end of the issue, we see her. So we're going to go from here and there. Like I said, it was a good issue, although that said. And I guess the last one I would probably mention is Black Number One, which I think, Tim, you read?
Yes.
Yes. So so this was a Kickstarter backed. I believe both of us ended up backing this as a Kickstarter.
So started as Kickstarter, and then Black Mass Studios actually picked it up also.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And now it's out on Comixology and whatnot. But at least the first issue is. If you've heard about this, it's about a young man gets powers, and basically what happened. So there was there was these three young kids walking along after this other policewoman gets interrogated, and she's the one telling the story. These three kids end up being mistaken identity because there was a robber in the neighborhood, and of course the police come, and there's a confrontation. All three of them get shot and killed, except for one of them wakes up in the back of the ambulance and escapes. He ends up getting found by this, he ends up getting holed up and found by this group who apparently are looking for people just like him because they have a special gene or quirk, as they call it, that gives them their special powers.
That quirk is what ended up confusing me a little bit.
Yeah. Basically, it's kind of... think extra.
It was explained kind of like quickly and in a right. confusing manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I thought it was going to be like all the black people had this ability, but it looks like only that's certain what I ones.
Yeah, but apparently it's like mutants where some have it, some don't, and there's some mixture of how that comes about, or not mixture of how that comes about, but you know, whoever some people have it, some people don't. I suspect they're going to go farther into that because like this group. That go around finding these people and training them to kind of stat it away or hide or for whatever reason. But they're also getting hunted by this other group, which apparently the police may or may not be a part of, that are looking for these people for we don't know what reasons. We just know they're either trying to... Well, I guess it kind of comes out that it seemed like they might be getting experimented on because there was that... but we don't get that sense of if that's the case. But pretty much there's somebody else looking for these self-same people for whatever reason also. But and that's kind of where the issue ends because then it goes into some other stuff that the studio is doing. So,
the last, only one I have left to talk about is Romulus Number One from Image. It has to do with a mother daughter who are part of this like sort of secret society style cult, and they decide to break away from the group. The mother gets killed, and now like the daughter is continuing their mission, and the members of this secret society are going off to, after the scientist, young scientist kid. She stops them from taking the kid. And when I say kid, I mean like probably early 20s. And that's basically where the issue ends, where she saved the scientist and probably can explain why in the next issue, why that secret society was so concerned with taking him in the first place. But it was a nice, easy read. I liked the art from Nelson Blake is the artist, and I think Brian Hill is the writer. So fun first issue with some nice art, and that's my rapid fire.
I've got two real quick that go together here. We've talked about Overground Comics in the past and how they're building a universe where every series is limited. Nothing's going to go on forever. Everything's set in the same universe. So all the characters will, you know, interact. Things that happen in one book will spill into another book. That time passes for real, and that, you know, if characters die, they're gone forever. They're doing, they're trying to work a real continuity into all of their books. And so this is the, I believe, the final issue of Hero Corp Knights. There are basically two teams. There's Hero Corp and there's Zero Technologies, and they're both these giant corporations that give people superpowers. And so in one book, you have the head of a company is murdered, and one of the heroes disappears. And in the other one, there's a breakout at their headquarters building, and it turns out that everybody who got powers didn't all become heroes. Some people turned into monsters, some people became villains, and so they were locked in a lab in the basement. So in Hero Corp Knights, you have this woman on the cover here. She is one of the people who escaped from the basement of Hero Corp, where she was being held as one of the monsters. And her she goes public, basically. And once she goes public, that is the revelation. The people who were the heroes who were working for Hero Corp as the Knights, they had no idea this was going on. And as soon as they find out that people were being held against their will in the basement and all of that, it basically, this book is ending because nobody wants to work for this company anymore. They don't trust the company anymore. They don't want to be a part of this. They don't want to, you know, be part of the cover-up. They don't want to be involved. Except one character who realizes that there's some sort of connection between what's happening with his company and what's happening with the company across town. And then, oddly enough, that character appears in the new issue of Absent Captain, because Absent Captain is about the other superhero team, who's the head of the company died, one of the members disappeared, and that whole group was thrown into chaos. He appears now in this book in order to talk to the quote-unquote, you know, enemy, the other team of superheroes, and basically goes to them and says, there's something about what's going on at your company that has an effect with what happened here at our company, and I don't know what it is, but we need to work together in order to figure out what's going on. And there's, you know, a lot of little other things, lots of subplots that are going on, and other things like that. But I give a lot of credit to this company for the way that they structured this to make it, you know, work out together. When they said that everything was in the same universe, you get the idea like, okay, well, something will blow up somewhere and they'll reference it in another book or whatever. But the way it really feels unfolding here is, if you remember early Valiant in the early 90s, the way the Valiant books would have a character suddenly appear out of nowhere in another title and connect those two titles together, the way they built that whole universe interlocking all the books one with another. And you finally really get that feeling here. They've had some of the other books in the past. There's one called Plus Ultra about a superheroine, and she talks about some of the heroes that appear in the other books. There's one called Tinkerer about a woman who makes devices, and so she gets picked up by one of the teams. And there have been these little things, but to have this book, to have Hero Corp Knights end because nobody wants to be part of this team anymore, so that's the final issue. The team breaks up, and that's the end of that series. But then the character who talks about, I'm going to stick with this until I find out what the truth is, he appears in the other book. To me, that just builds the excitement of how this universe is coming together and the way that they've done this job of growing the stories and having in their mind a big overall story. You can tell that they planned out far in advance and they've been slotting the books to give you certain aspects of the story. So I give them a lot of credit for that. I love this universe that they built. If I could get review copies of these things, I'd share them with you guys. You know, the last couple issues have not been made available digitally. So, you know, if I get a hold of those copies, I will share them with you guys, because this is just a fantastic world that they've built. And I love these books and I love the way that they've made all that stuff work together. So again, a shout out to Overground Comics, because I love the stuff they're doing.
I like the title. The title really jumped out at me.
Do y'all order those for your store?
Yeah, we do. I always order one for me and then we order a couple for the shelf. And usually they sell online, not to people coming in off the street, but there are people online apparently looking for copies, and we usually sell out to those people.
Okay, cool. Clicks of the week. I'm going with Agent 70, who had messaged in earlier what his click of the week was, but we're both going with Champions number one.
Yes. I know this is right up your alley, Tim.
It is.
It's so right up your alley.
Yeah. I'm going to go with that also.
Well, you know, if my son had a click, he would also click that one.
Nice.
But me being the giant kid that I am, I am actually going to go with He-Man Thundercats. I just cannot pass that up.
I kind of figured you would either do that one or Spidey, one of the two.
Yeah, yeah, and I would do Spidey, except I'm going to hold out for the final issue. But this being what it is, like I said, this is totally the story I could see myself doing with all my toys on the living room floor.
Is it that good?
It really is. It's fun. Like there are a couple things that won't make sense until you get to the final page.
Okay.
But yeah, overall, I was really happy. Like, it's one of those things where I read it and I really enjoyed it. And this weekend, when I have more time and I can decompress a little better, I'm going to read it again, where I can, you know, spend more time, you know, staring at each panel and reading things a little more in depth.
Yeah. I'm going to make sure I have a copy of this, you know, handy with me when I'm waiting online at New York Comic Con at some point over the weekend and give it a shot to read.
Yeah, it's good. And also, there are two covers, and they do form one picture. So you get the villain cover and the hero cover. I, of course, bought both because I'm a giant nerd.
Of course.
And I'm going to put them in frames and hang them on the wall next to each other.
No!
Fans of Power every Friday night.
Whatever. That's right. Are you going to talk about this on that show, too?
Yeah, well, I produce that one. I don't usually show up on there unless someone's sick and they need me to fill in. I usually do the editing and the connecting everybody together in the conference call and all that behind-the-scenes stuff. But yeah, they've been talking about this, excited for it, so they'll be covering it this week. In fact, one of the guys is at New York Comic Con this weekend. He's been taking pictures and trying to talk to people. So
nice.
Yep. So there we go.
All righty. Every time?
Yep.
I got it. Help keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit CSPN.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For each and every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
So, once again, it's New York Comic Con week, so lots of juicy news items to discuss tonight. First up, we have Valiant reveals Michael Rowe as the live-action Ninjak for upcoming Secret Project.
Ooh.
So,
is that the guy from Dirty Jobs?
That's what I thought.
What I took away from this in the little notes section is that this project is also going to star former Power Ranger Jason David Frank and professional wrestler John Morrison.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. I knew Dirk would like that.
My ears perked up a little bit. What? What are we talking about?
Let's see. Legendary Defender, Voltron Legendary Defender Season 2 trailer came out with a poster. And there's going to be a New York Comic Con panel.
And a new toy line.
Yeah.
Coming in January.
I still need to watch the first season of that.
It's good. It's
pretty good.
Okay, cool. Alita Battle Angel, which I keep seeing articles about, but I have no idea what it is. But it's circling Luke Cage's Marshala Ali for Marshala.
So when we were, as Age of 70 mentioned earlier, we were on the classic team up and we were trying to figure out how to pronounce his name, and it is Mahershala.
Mahershala.
Is that Cottonmouth?
Or it's Mahershala, actually, is the way I heard it pronounced.
Mahershala. So yes, it is Cottonmouth.
Yeah. So pretty much just like it sounds. But anyway, yeah. And Battle Angel Alita is I don't know if it was a manga first, but it was an anime that was kind of real popular.
Yes.
Watch Girl's been trying to get off the ground forever. Wait, who's behind that? The director or producer? Anyway, it doesn't matter. So it's been trying to get off the ground for a while, and now they're still apparently trying to do it.
Netflix was down for 2 hours, and Luke Cage responded. Luke Cage streamers wrote Netflix Saturday afternoon.
Presumably, so.
That's what we're going to blame it on.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more than a coincidence.
I mean, yeah, there's no one's, you know, we haven't seen any numbers or anything behind it. So that's, and like, even Friday night, people were talking about, hey, it was kind of hard to get on, or I should, well, late Friday night, Saturday morning, slash whatever. But yeah, it blew up.
And Mike Colter discussed Luke Cage's possible advisory role in The Defenders. Spoiler, Luke Cage boss wanted Prince to cameo in the season finale.
I read that. That was interesting.
Mm.
You know, that he was trying to get, you know, and there's an element in the first few episodes of the Luke Cage series that Chiyo Coker was going to use to try to convince Prince to come on as a musical guest in one of the later episodes. So, you know, I thought that was pretty interesting to read.
And I guess this is not may have in this article, but Netflix's Punisher looks to have started filming because there's casting news that came out today. And
there's image, set photos, yeah.
Set photos. You can take a look, exclusive first look at Marvel's Iron Fist in action, plus its 2017 release date, which is March 17, 2017.
Yo, that's going to be here before we know it.
And it looks like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. confirmed Jason O'Mara's patriotic identity for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, yeah, so spoilers for last week's episode, if you hadn't seen it.
Wolverine 3 has a title, Logan, not Owen, just Logan. It's basically the same story plot of him being an older mutant. His healing factor is not what it used to be. Looks like X-23 is going to play a role.
Yeah, I was about to say. So,
a new Doctor Strange clip had a hidden message.
Really?
Yeah. So during the clip, you hear some stuff played backwards during the cut, and somebody went ahead and flipped it forward. And it basically says, "I'm the Magnificent with the sensational style, and I can go mile to mile." Anyway, you get the picture. That's not actually what it says, but nevertheless, somebody will get that joke.
They actually aired it during Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then I saw the... So they played a trailer backwards.
Mm-hmm.
They literally played it backwards. And then I saw online, I think the Doctor Strange official Twitter account tweeted the forward version of the commercial.
Right.
I might have said trailer earlier, but I meant it was a commercial.
That was a teaser, yeah, but either way.
So it's a lot... it's teasing... Basically, it's teasing the time stone, looks like.
Ah.
Right, which was another article that came out. Yeah,
something about time. Like they keep mentioning time in the commercial, and which made sense with him, like, with the trailer going backwards.
Mm-hmm. So. I was about to say, it's very, Harry Potter, was it the that thing that Hermione had? I didn't see this, but it makes me think of that. Like, there's a that movie where she's...
she's got the little necklace thing. That
yeah,
she spins,
exactly.
Time goes backwards.
Exactly.
Right, I gotcha.
Yeah. Supergirl's Gotham reference doesn't mean a Batman crossover yet. So in a teaser video for Supergirl's new season, there's a couple on the street that like get saved by her, and the dad's like, "We should have never left Gotham City," or something like that. Or we're going back to Gotham.
Something about going back to Gotham, yeah.
So everyone's like, "Oh my god!" They reference Batman.
All right, there's a giant Easter egg.
Krypton, the show Krypton on Sci-Fi Network, the Superman prequel show, cast Cameron Cuff in lead as Jor-El's ancestor. Ben Affleck talks more about Deathstroke's role in The Batman and why he cast Joe Manganiello.
Really?
And now he's now Affleck's come out and said that it's actually not going to be called The Batman. That he was just saying, you know, it could be The Batman. Anyway, they don't know what it's going to be called yet.
I hate you, Affleck.
Hey, he was the best part of that movie.
Yeah, but now he's starting to lose any goodwill that he might have built up from that.
The Arrow premiere featured a police sketch from Neil Adams.
Cool.
I watched that last night, and I don't remember that. The Flash of John Wesley Shipp says his J is the version of Barry 25 years later.
Makes sense, because people are his version. Anyway.
Suicide Squad extended cut trailer touts December release on Blu-ray. So you'll get those Joker scenes that got cut. The Han Solo film is doing actor tests for a female lead, Tessa Thompson and Zoe Kravitz, among others, testing for the role.
You mean Lisa Bonet's daughter? all the people that watched Luke Cage just now just got that one.
Yeah.
The season premiere ratings for The Flash and Arrow were both down this week. One of them
might have had to do with a certain sports ball game. We don't know.
Well, last night for Arrow, there was the Major League Baseball wild card game.
And you, San Francisco, and the even year curse.
Yep. And a lot of sections of the South interrupted regular primetime programming to cover Hurricane Matthew. Everyone in the South, especially Florida, stay safe.
Yeah.
That means you, Roddy, once it gets up to your side of the coast.
Yeah. Look at the old age of 70, hopefully I'm far enough wind where it won't be too bad, but yeah, we'll be expecting some wind and rain and such. If it's as bad as Hugo got.
Yeah. I'll be heading down there next week, so I'll go down to Florida once all the chaos has ended.
Once the hubbub hopefully. Is passed, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can Marvel release the original soundtrack for Luke Cage.
Or will, as of tomorrow. But this is them talking about a vinyl version, which I am looking to get, and I think that's... So it's going to come out digitally tomorrow, and looks like you can pre-order the vinyl for it tomorrow also. And there's it looks like what's going to be the cover.
That's a nice cover.
Yeah.
Is that in the clickbait section, that link?
No, this is... No, that's regular news. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A cool cover.
I want to save that image after the show. All right, and comic book news... Let's go back up. Dark Horse will release a new Mass Effect Dragon Age comic in 2017.
Yeah, it'll be Mass Effect Dragon Age will have a new one. There's going to be a coloring book, so they're just doing all of the stuff. Because Mass Effect Andromeda will be out in the March or somewhere around about.
They announced four members of the upcoming Justice League of America comic. The Ray, who's going to star in a CW Seed animated series.
I like this one.
Ryan Choi, The Atom, Killer Frost, and Vitson. So, Hasbro New York Comic Con, 'twas the night before, party with pics of new Marvel Legends, Star Wars, My Little Pony, Transformers, and more.
Yeah, it's disappointing that they don't actually have a booth at New York Comic Con, but they do this night before party where they do all the reveals.
Because no one cares about toys.
Although we do have photos.
Free. I disagree.
We do have photos from the night before party available at popculturenetwork.com.
Nice.
Cha-ching.
That's your man on the that's your man on the street, right?
One of them, actually. That's a different guy.
Nice.
Green Lantern on the Planet of the Apes, a new DC Boom crossover. So Planet of the Apes, Green Lantern crossover.
Wait, hold on.
Oops. I will give DC props because they've been doing pretty well on the crossover front like the last year. Yeah, Batman,
Turtles,
Batman, and something something Peel.
Oh, with the original Avengers, Steed and
yeah. They had the Lumberjanes, Gotham Academy. Was it Star Trek, Green Lantern? Now Green Lantern, Planet of the Apes.
Well, I was about to say because didn't Green the Star Trek is IDW, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what they can do is get all three of them together and get like a Green Lantern Planet of the Apes Star Trek thing going.
Well, they did a Star Trek Planet of the Apes.
Right.
And a Green Lantern Star Trek, so.
Just tie them all together.
Yep.
And I think they did. Didn't they do a Star Trek Green Lantern?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boom.
Marvel debuted. First of that, we stand variant covers. Miss Marvel made the cover of The Village Voice.
This would explain why I haven't seen any copies of The Village Voice around, apparently.
Hmm.
Marvel and Benedict Cumberbatch announced Hero X Children's Charity. South Carolina Comic Shop raises money for victim of fatal elementary school shooting. Green Arrow's Benjamin Percy is going to write James Bond. And Paul Cornell is going to write something.
Okay.
Well, it's like the announcement came out for like Percy doing something for Dynamite and Cornell doing...
Yeah.
Riverdale, the show based on Archie Comics, is getting an Archie comic.
That makes sense.
I guess this is it's like big news. I figured that would.
Well,
been.
So it looks like it's going to be a prequel for the show. So it's not necessarily like the old comic book stuff. It's basically based off the show stuff. And I guess they're connecting the worlds, or not connecting the worlds, but connecting the show to the comic, whatever.
Spoiler alert! But the Walking Dead comic and TV show will have different endings.
What?
They're not even following the same. Story anyway,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they follow the same basic structure, but yeah, they swing wildly different from time to time.
Lion Forge Comics buys Magnetic Press to make the Magnetic Collection.
Yeah, the so first legend, like the Boomer Kenya deal.
The first Legend of Korra graphic novel is coming in June 2017. Ridiculously posable Spider-Man figure basically does whatever you want.
Hey, I saw pictures of this. This figure.
It sounds creepy.
Ah.
I did see pictures of this figure. I guess it's from the same article that that Roddy is referring to. But, you know, if you've ever wanted a Spider-Man that could really, you know, there you go, that could really take the pose of anything you could imagine, or even from any panel if you wanted to recreate it. it's pretty intense. There's lots of little things you can add to the figure. Like there's another draw for the YouTube show is if you tune into this, you see all the various variant eyes that you can put onto the Spider-Man figure to create expressions.
Here, Tim, click on Roddy so we see his picture.
I have it on it.
Oh, it's not showing up for me. Talk, Roddy.
Yeah, so here we go. We got pictures of Spidey in various poses, which you know somebody's going to make a YouTube. Well, actually, there already was a YouTube account that somebody uses stop motion stuff with.
Oh, yeah, I used to watch that guy. It's just some random guy.
Yeah, that's the one. Looks like this is going to be like $60 in Japan.
So, I need to see how much is this thing going to cost. Oh,
well, like it's $60 in Japan. Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's not bad. I can't.
So it's probably going to be like $80 if you're trying to.
It depends. I was going to say it depends on if they decide to import it. It may be roughly the same price.
Yeah, maybe. There's no word on it.
I like the picture of him pulling the two webs.
Oh, this one here?
Yeah, one. I like that one. Let's see. La Barinquina goes on sale December 22nd, 2016. And La Barinquina is an original character created by graphic novelist Edgardo Miranda Rodriguez, which debuted at 59th Annual National Puerto Rican Day Parade. The first full-length issue is in production under Somos Arte. And that's it for news.
Okay. All right, so we'll get another read-in before we wrap the show. This episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees. Your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale at a discount each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8, like Thumbs Up, and Droid Evolution, inspired by Star Wars The Force Awakens, and Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner, and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
And we'll be back next week to recap everything New York Comic Con related. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt and go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And go check out his Vine comic book reviews.
That's right, sucker.
Agent 70 is at Agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram. And if you're at New York Comic Con, tweet at him this week.
That's right.
Weekend.
Let me know if you're in the house.
Also, send tweets out to at MattWang97, who's also attending New York Comic Con.
Shout out to Matt Wang.
Shout out to Matt Wang. Shout out to who's our friends that we shouted out last week, Ruddy? Gaming, I'm forgetting.
CatMar77 and Gaming Ronin.
Gaming Ronin, yes. Yeah. I was chatting with them on Google Plus. They were responding to one of my television articles about, was it a Timeless on NBC?
Nice. So,
appreciate the responses. So, yes, we'll be back next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Thursday, every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
Did you get Roddy Cat in?
I did not.
Who's there? Follow, okay.
follow Roddy Cat on Twitter at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
And hey, check out one Agent 70 and myself, as we said earlier, on the Classic Team Up, which is, I guess, going to be the part one of our Luke Cage thing. We're working on a Treasuries edition for...
Yes, be on the lookout for part two of the crossover between Classic Team Up and the comic book, the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, because we will wrap up our review of Luke Cage. If you are interested in listening to us talk about episodes 1 through 6, catch up with the Classic Team Up episode 45, Rage with the Cage, on CSPN.us.
Yep. Listen to this, and then afterwards, go get some coffee.
So, Luke Cage inside joke, people.
Yes.
We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey!
What's on your